time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
If any Power 5 coach lights himself on fire by any means, we will do an emergency pod. You have my promise right now.
Pete Thamel.
Some people are going to get left holding the bag here in this carousel.
With SI's Pat Forty.
Like, get out of our lives. Get this person out of the press conference.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And feel like we should start with a little inspirational words from the great philosopher James Joseph Harbaugh. Said this on the Inside Michigan radio show about the Penn State game. There was a winner. There was a non-winner. But the real winner was football. The game of football. That's how I feel about this podcast.
Who's the non-winner in the podcast? I think we're all winners here, aren't we?
Harbaugh's pants getting set on fire is the non-winner I think he was talking about there by the space heater.
I would say this. I felt there were no winners on our team. We were all non-winners. So I like your just positivity, Pat.
I'm going to try it on for a change. Try a little positivity. See how long it lasts.
Harbaugh, I mean, he has a way with words. I don't know what that way is. But he did burn his pants. You see that? He got so close to the space heater. Yep. He burnt his pants.
Yeah. See, if he was wearing the old Walmart khakis instead of the blue ones there, I think they might have withstood the heat.
Or he just might have gone up into flames on the sideline.
That's true. The Walmart khakis might actually be the worst thing for that.
Stop, drop, and roll. That would have been quite a sight to see.
Yes.
Jim Harbaugh had lit himself on fire on the sideline of Penn State. Yes, that. Then the real winner would have been football. I mean, we don't want any big burns. They would have stuffed them out.
But the internet would have been the big winner.
Yeah. Yeah, the big winner would have been
us. We would have had our first midday Saturday emergency podcast.
I will say this. If any Power 5, I'm not doing Group of 5, because God knows what they're burning in like sideline barrels at the MAC to stay warm during midweek action. But if any Power 5 coach lights himself on fire by any means, we will do an emergency pod. You have my promise right now.
Yes, that's a sacred pact with the listenership. If we have that, if we have self-immolation, there will be an emergency pod.
Okay,
I got a quick apparel question, though, since we're talking about burning pants and everything. An alert listener who's actually also a viewer saw the video on y'all's Cut Rate website of the three of us talking about something. And he pointed out, Pete and I were both wearing hats. He said, I've never seen Wetzel in a hat. And I had to think about it. Have we ever seen Dan Wetzel in a hat?
I wear my Bruins hat sometimes, yeah.
Okay. Oh, you know what? You're right. And then actually that WME hat that I thought was like Wetzel Media Enterprises or something. But yeah.
All right. William Morris Endeavor. If you had a real agent, you would know. If you've worked for a real agency, power agents. Listen, when you got hair, this is good, Pat.
So, understood.
You would know, if any. We have good hair on this broadcast. Got to admit that. It's the best hair of any college football podcast going.
We don't bring much else to the table from a looks department, but I think we're okay in the hair department.
Let's talk about who has got plenty of time for haircuts. That's all the guys fired already. The mid-season firing brigade continues. Let's start in Virginia Tech. Justin Fuente is out with two games left in his sixth season. He went 43-31, 28-20. He's getting $8.75 million in a buyout. This is the guy that resurrected Memphis, and it was a huge coup when Virginia Tech got Justin Fuente. Like, everyone was like, all right, that is a nice hire, because he had his choice of jobs. But this did not work out. Just flat out did not work out. Team was pretty listless of late. 6 years, you got plenty of time. I was actually a little baffled on this, and so I looked this up, and now I don't have the note in front of me, but actually, so I'm going to be pretty close. To me, you only win at Virginia Tech if you're absolutely killing it in recruiting down in the Tidewater area, Norfolk, yeah, even into Richmond, or the DMV in Washington, D.C. It's a weird school. It's a state school, but it's in the farthest touch. It's so far out, 4 hours from everywhere. But you've got to land those. There's a lot of talent in those two places. 2017 class, in state and in the DMV. He signed 3 4 stars out of, there were 15 in state. He signed 3. The next year, in state, 2 of 9, then 2 of 9, and then 0 4 stars last year and 2 years ago and 0 this year. Last 2 years, no 4-star in-state recruits went with Virginia Tech. There were 16 of them. And during those years, 1 year he didn't sign a single player from the DMV. The recruiting was a total disaster. It was like, I'm not going, he wasn't successful. He would have taken those players, but they just lost their recruiting base. And then when you're, I remember Steve Spurrier saying this, when you're not getting local kids, not only are those the easiest kids to get, but then you try to go to like Jacksonville or Atlanta and you're telling people, hey, you should come play for us. And they look and go, why are the kids a couple hours away not playing for you? So it looked like it's just the bottom dropped out in recruiting. And if you're not nailing those two areas, that's where Michael Vick and Tyrod Taylor and all the way back to Bruce Smith and Allen Iverson's from and Alonzo Moore, so many great players. You're not getting those guys. You can't win at Virginia Tech. And so that's my guess on what we're wrong. And that's my guess on what they got to get right on this next hire. Pat, your thoughts?
Yep, no doubt about it. I mean, that was Frank Beamer's bread and butter area to recruit when they had it going well there. If you're missing there now, I mean, shoot. A lot of people are in there. Clemson's gotten in there. Notre Dame's gotten in there. I'm sure Penn State and others as well. So if you can't get your share from the Tidewater up through the DMV at Virginia Tech, you're going to struggle. That's the way it is. And, you know, it's funny. The first 2 years, he looked like he was the right hire. Everybody thought he was the right hire. And then the first 2 years, they were like 10-4, 9-4. And then everything just kind of bottomed out, whether that's recruiting or what. But like those 24-23 the last 4 years. And Virginia Tech should probably be better than that, especially playing in the Coastal Division where the competition just isn't that tough. So it surprised me that it went south and stayed south for Justin Fuente. And, you know, that's now, yeah, it's time to move on and see if you're probably never going to have another Frank Beamer, somebody that's going to be there for 25 years and do phenomenal work. But where they go will be very interesting because, as we have talked about before, the competition is ramping up. There's more and more jobs coming open, and there's some good jobs, and there could be some more good jobs coming open. So where do they fit into the mix on this? Going to be really interesting to see what Whit Bob Babcock's got for a plan for where to go.
To Dan's point on recruiting, I remember writing a story at Sports Illustrated a few years back when Frank Beamer retired. And I got a quote from Dave Clawson, who had been the coach at Richmond from 04 to 07 and really knew the Virginia recruiting dynamics. And his quote was, quote, "They had such a foothold and pipeline to Virginia Beach. Literally, all those kids would drive by UVA to go to Virginia Tech. A lot of that was because those coaches loved, respected, and trusted Coach Beamer." And that always stood in the back of my mind because, like, you know, you're going to go to the nearest by school. So to get droves of recruits to drive by a school to come to your school speaks to the power of relationships, the power of staying power, right? Somebody's there. Virginia Tech had a brand under Frank Beamer. Beamer ball, lunch pail, special teams, big corners, you know, beating you up. I mean, it was when you picture Frank Beamer's Virginia Tech teams, you get a very distinct image in your mind of a time and a place and a style in what they
look. I think they always played on Thursday night, too. It was like Thursday night, Miami, four times a year.
They did play a lot on Thursday night, which is wonderful. The junkies delight. As Virginia Tech seeks, you know, going forward here, I think it'll be really interesting how they can revive a national brand, which Frank Beamer built them in, but they also have to capture local hearts too. So I think Clawson, who I just happened to quote there, will be high on Whit Babcock's list. I think Babcock has seen him way overachieve at Wake Forest. Clearly, this is kind of Wake season, Wake's moment. They have their own style offense. I think like he will be squarely in the mix there. I think your group of five guys will be popping up there. Your Jamie Chadwell at Coastal, who also has a very distinct offensive style and kind of is like a folksy, charming guy. You tend to hire opposites. Justin Fuente, very good coach, straightforward, hard-nosed. I would say Justin Fuente is a square. Do you think that's fair, Pat? Like not exactly Captain Charisma. He's not the first guy you're going to go chat up at the cocktail party. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Not all coaches have to be loquacious.
But he doesn't want to chat with you at the cocktail party. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Correct. So, and look, I'll be very upfront here. I, you know, our first guess of this hire, I thought it was a home run. I thought it was a great fit. I thought everything about it really worked. It didn't work. Sometimes hires don't work. And I think that speaks to a larger point here that we can dive into as we go to job 12 in this carousel, which Virginia Tech is. The impending firing of Manny Diaz. I think we can all agree we saw the first step of that when Miami fired their AD pretty suddenly on Monday. Will be job 13. Is that a lot? Some people are going to get left holding the bag here in this carousel. Like there are going to be far more open jobs than there are quality replacements. And we're going to see some AD introduce his seventh choice that his fan base hates through gritted teeth. And the high stakes, you know, this podcast, we tend to focus on the negative. God bless us. And that's why you listen to us. And I wrote a column that really channeled the spirit of that. Like this week, basically, who will get left holding that bag to me is the most fascinating theater of all this, because you're going to see some ADs scared of that. So they're maybe not going to wait out a home run hire, and they're going to take a hire that's just a double because they don't want to get left stark naked in the cold. But there is a high stakes game going on right now in the coaching carousel. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. Florida, which could well be job 14, right, is going to be the third top 10 job that's open. But there's also going to be a pretty good thicket of middle class jobs open too. Upper middle class jobs open too. Virginia Tech's a good job. Miami's a good job. Washington's a good job. Arizona State, which we expect to open, is a good job. Nobody's sneezing at Duke. It's not an elite job. It's probably a bottom 10 job, but that's still, there'll be a lot of people who want the Duke job. The timing of how these all unfold, you're almost better off if David Clough was going to retire, just have him wait until February. And then you can just have a clean whack at the market. And you're not scrambling to get pretty much anybody that's going to be available now would be available then. It just would be without the competition. So the dynamics of the carousel, and I know you guys make fun of me because I get geeked up about this stuff this time of year, are as compelling as I've ever seen in all the years I've been trying.
I don't think there's any question. It's going to be a dogfight. There aren't a million great candidates out there. Someone's going to grab a hot coach that doesn't work out. Someone's going to stumble into gold. Someone's going to end up, you know, plucking some coordinator off an NFL staff, and it's either going to work or not. Or there's going to be the mid-major that has 1 year. I don't know. This is going to be interesting. Miami, presuming the Manny Diaz is out, and it's certainly when the AD gets fired and you're 19-15 in year three, doesn't bode well. Let's just say that. Don't buy green bananas.
Especially at a place where the boosters are very loud. You know, it takes them like one bad quarter for them to give up on whoever the coach is at any point in time. So whoever the AD is, like Blake James had to hear a lot of that and listen to it incessantly, really, especially this year. That's just kind of the nature of that beast. There's some people think it's a terrible job because they haven't been on the cutting edge facility wise and maybe staffing and all that sort of thing. It's another place I would like to take my chances with all the talent around there.
Talent.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Talent.
And tell me it's a bad job.
Talent. So I texted my best Miami source, or certainly the most interesting Miami source, in Nevin Shapiro.
Did you have to do it through Core Links?
No, he's out. He's out. Okay. He had the COVID. He got released on house arrest during COVID, and I think he no longer has to wear a monitoring device. I don't want to get into Nevin's legal issues.
Things are looking up for Nevin. He's definitely strong, and he may have the bracelet, the ankle Nevin, bracelet.
NIL. Nevin's coming out with NIL. Oh my goodness, this guy's on top of the world.
The old days, Nevin. Yeah, if Nevin ever gets back in business fully, okay, the Canes are going to win.
He was before his time. Yep.
He was NIL before NIL, yeah. To say the least. But almost everything he did with Miami, I think there'd still be violations. I don't know. But anyway, Nevin is claiming that the top candidate is Lane Kiffin with Randy Shannon as the defensive coordinator.
I could certainly see them wanting Lane. It always cracks me up though. But this is what the boosters do at some places, including Miami. We'll name your staff for you. as we go, okay? Here's who you need. You have to hire Lane. You've got to have Randy Shannon because he knows the program and he recruits South Florida. You don't get a say in the matter. That's how these things work out. And
Ed Reed needs to be on that staff.
Yeah. Can we play a game?
Sure.
Let's play a game. You're Mario Cristobal. You're at Oregon. You have an endless fountain of Phil Knight cash. You have elite facilities. You have a program that's competing for the playoff as we speak. A pipeline of talent come from Southern California. A Pac-12 that's pretty much asleep, right? I mean, it's pretty heavily comatose. Would you leave, and I think he has an $8, $9 million buyout, would you leave there to go home, quote-unquote home, to Miami if you're Mario Cristobal?
All right. Is there another part to the game, or is that just the game?
I got question two. That's question one.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
My answer is no, for all the reasons you just said.
Yeah, I guess it's not a very fun game if I give the answers.
I'll tell you what. I love Miami. Do I get like free dinner at Joe's Crabs? Can I go to Joe's anytime I want? Get the broiled tomato and the giant claws. I don't know, man. I don't know. Miami, that would not be the smart thing. The thing, he's already got tons of money. I don't know. No, I wouldn't do it, but I might.
Dan, you're not going to just have a nice Oregon Pinot and go for a hike? That's not your deal.
No, it's not.
A Jameson in the corner booth at Joe's Stone Crab and the crabs and the tomato. Yeah.
A weekend in Miami or a weekend hiking Bend, Oregon? Yeah, what do you think? I'm going Miami, baby. I can't text some granola guy. I can text Nevin Shapiro. Me and Nevin would be attached to the hip. It'd be great.
You don't have any granola hookups.
I got nothing. I got nothing out there.
I remember one of my cousins
lives in Portland now. You know, so there you go. Okay. I got that. But no, I go to Miami and more fun. It's going to be wild. See, the thing about Miami is exciting. It's either going to fail spectacularly or succeed spectacularly. You got NIL. You try to do it. I don't know. I don't think he's going to do it. But what about Lane? Now, what about Lane?
Well, that was part two of the game. If you're Lane, now say this about Ole Miss. Like, they have been updrafted by the SEC in this great financial boon the SEC is in. The ACC, as it is projected right now, is almost going to have like half the TV money as the SEC when their ESPN deal starts, I think, in 24. But the ACC could get a little bit more money if they get on Comcast, but they're still going to be, over the course of a decade, hundreds of millions of dollars behind the SEC per school. And then it just becomes a matter of how many hundreds of millions. So I basically said in my column today that the ACC TV deal is aging like someone who smokes three packs a day. It's just like we're going to wheeze until 2036. So if you're Lane, now Lane likes boats. Lane likes pretty girls.
Only Lane 40 likes, minutes from Boca to the stadium Lane now. Likes, he's already got a house.
He likes fresh water. As we've come to learn.
Well, they don't have that down there.
If you're Lane Kiffin, do you stay at Ole Miss? Which it will be so desperate to keep you, they will give you anything. Like, they'll pay him $12 million a year. That there's no desperation like second school SEC desperation. Just check the notice of allegations in the history to see that. Like, if you're Lane, do you stay at a place that will just play you through the nose, or do you go try to recapture some of that Miami magic?
That's one where you look and say, okay, if everybody in my division is rolling at their peak, where do we fit in? You say that in the SEC West and you say that in the ACC Coastal? Ha! Go to Miami, baby. ACC, if the SEC West, if everybody's rolling, you're the fourth best team, maybe fifth, probably fifth. And that's how
Oklahoma and Texas are coming.
Well, that's before Texas and Oklahoma come in. So go. Be in the same division with football indifferent North Carolina, football apathetic Duke, Virginia Tech, where they've lost control of their recruiting backyard, Pittsburgh, which sometimes hits, sometimes misses. Yeah, give me that division. I'll take that one.
I bet Lane doesn't know who's in the ACC Coastal.
That doesn't care.
Like
Miami never should. They should never care. It's like, who's showing up? We're kicking their ass. Yeah.
That's one of the great, yeah, that's how bad Miami's been, the malpractice there, that they have not dominated that division.
They have made one ACC title game, or should have made it, but were under probation and didn't. Is that right?
I believe they played in one, because like everybody, we went through a cycle where like all seven of them have played in the last 7 years. It was crazy, where it, like every single year was a different one.
Lane should go to Miami. Lane should be Lane. The Lane yes. train is great at Mississippi, and he can continue to do well at Mississippi. It's a very, very difficult to get over that last hump. And the other ones are just going to keep, even, you know, Saban's going to retire some. The other ones are going to keep coming. It's a tough spot. He's done a great job. Mississippi's always been somewhat of an underachieving a program, and he's certainly now achieving it and could probably continue it. But you're Lane Kiffin, baby. You should be in South Beach. You should be on your boat. You should be absolutely in the sun. You should have a tan. You should have two girlfriends in the office. You should. What are you doing now? Just wandering around that square, talking about how quaint it is and going to Square Books? No. Yeah, City Grocery's a great bar, but it ain't nothing in Miami. Come on, Lane.
Yeah,
Randy Shannon. You just got to load up. And you bet Ed Reed needs to be on that staff. All of a sudden, everyone in South Florida is coming back. State of Miami, do it the old Howard Schellenberger way. When you get rolling there, baby, Miami has put together the greatest teams, as great a teams at least, as I've ever seen. I mean, they, Butch Adam just absolutely crushing. Go to Miami. Come on.
Yeah. Miami did make the 2017
Nevin Shapiro's going to be right.
Title game. Miami did yeah. make the that in 2017, where they right. lost to the Kelly Bryant-led Clemson Tigers 38-3.
Yeah, and that was in that run where there was a new winner every single year. Duke 2013, Georgia Tech 2014, North Carolina 2015, Virginia Tech 2016, Miami, Pittsburgh, Virginia. They just turned the whole thing over. That's the Coastal Division. Go dominate it.
Can you imagine being the Miami coach when there's no longer NCAA rules? Like, that was the only thing that ever did them in.
It's true.
It was Nevin was working on the side. Now you can just bring him in.
Put him on the staff. Hell, make him the recruiting coordinator.
Hell, he basically was on the staff. That's what got them in trouble. Yeah, that was the problem. Yeah, he wasn't really on the side when you're just bringing recruits over the guy's house. All right. Other one. Jimmy Lake out in Seattle is out. Two seasons. Went 7-6. Unbelievable. Coached 13 games. He got a $10 million buyout.
Yeah, somebody made a great point on Twitter. He never even coached in the Apple Cup.
Apple Cup.
Oh, in the Apple Cup and fired. Yep. Oh, my God.
Wow. Only Washington coach.
Never played him.
Never lost to him. Yeah, it's crazy up there. I don't know what's going on in that corner. Anyway, who we got? Kalani Sitake of BYU. Jay Norvell. Dave Aranda from Baylor. Would he go all the way up there? Who's a Washington guy, Pete?
You know, it's a pretty good job. When you look right now at USC being fairly dormant, UCLA is decent but non-threatening. Arizona State about to hit reset. Oregon's running, but usually if somebody like Oregon's running, it's because there are other factors that are not fully functioning. So. I'm really bullish on the Washington job, and I'm optimistic that Jen Cohen up there can really go lure a prominent sitting head coach to come in and unlock that thing and get it rolling. I don't think, you know, they're going to look more the Chris Peterson mold of an established offensive, like you always hire opposites, right? So it's going to be an established guy, probably got a little bit of an offensive bend. And I really think that's going to be very interesting to watch unfold there, because they cut bait fast.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's a good job. You've got players in the Seattle area. You can get into California. You know, it's not like you are Tucson or the Palouse or whatever, trying to sell a city kid on coming some, like you're selling a city kid on another city. You've got something to sell there. Yes. If ever there were time for an opposite hire, as we often see, this is it, because the guy that you hired with no head coaching experience and no offensive acumen, who hired a terrible offensive coordinator. Yeah. You don't want that guy. So you want the opposite of that. Now, can you get him? I think they probably can. If you want charisma, Kalani Sitake's got a lot of that. I don't know whether he's like your great technician strategy guy or not. There are other people out there that I think will be interested in that job. The thing that I wrote about, touched on this this week, Jimmy Lake, there were obviously extraneous issues in terms of the player confrontation, I guess, if we're going to call it that, on the sideline against Oregon, and the report of him chucking a player into a locker at halftime of another game. Now, but here's the thing is Washington did not fire him for cause. So they're basically saying, they're not saying that his conduct was so unacceptable that we are going to get rid of him because of that. So if this comes down to winning and losing, here's the problem. 13 games, shortest tenure of anybody in the last decade in FBS. Before you get fired for winning and losing. And this is largely what this is. I think everyone agrees if they were 6-1 right now or 7-0 or whatever at the time that he was got suspended, he ain't getting fired, okay? He's probably not even getting suspended. Here's the issue. Jimmy Lake, black man, fastest coach fired. Willie Taggart fired after 21 games at Florida State. Turner Gill fired after 24 games at Kansas. John Embry fired after 24 games at Colorado. What do they all have in common? All black coaches. Black coaches make up a small percentage of the FBS total. It's a matter of the Power Five. They made up 13.7% throughout the last decade. They make up more than four. They make up 40% of the 10 fastest firings. I'm not saying you look at all of them and say racism, but that's a track record. And that's something that I think a lot of black coaches are thinking about. Like, geez. If you're Ty Willingham and you got trapdoored, but Charlie Weiss kept going, Turner Gill got trapdoored and Charlie Weiss kept going at Kansas. Mike Norvell's going to get a longer run at Florida State with a worse record than Willie Taggart. It's a problem for the sport. Maybe you're hiring the wrong guys. Don't know, but you're having trouble identifying black coaches, developing black coaches, giving black coaches good jobs and giving them enough time to do the job.
I don't think there's any doubt, A, that, you know, some of this is glaring and that it is a huge concern amongst African-American coaches in college football throughout. And it's not that this coach deserved another year or not, but, you know, you look at Scott Frost just keeps getting years, right? Well, we like him. He's one of us. Well, what does that mean? What's us? You know, you go to, you know, they did it. Not the situation, but Texas Tech, right? We don't like the coach. He's gone. So there's a personality thing here, and it's very, very hard for African-American coaches to feel comfortable that they're connecting with alums and fans in the same manner. So, again, not every decision is that, as you said, but the numbers are the numbers. Hard to justify keeping them, but you could have given them another year. I think as bad as hurt them as much as Ohio State went in there and raided top 2 5-star recruits from Seattle last year. Like, you know, there hasn't been recruiting success, although it has not been that bad. It's not as bad as Justin Fuente, who Ohio State raided also. So, yeah, it's a concern. All right. Also on the coaching front, LSU is still open, as we know. Jimbo Fisher has again come out forcefully, said he is not interested in the job. He's staying. Let's see his quote. His thing is recruiting, which is pretty interesting because he landed a top 100 running back out of Baton Rouge like the day after. So he doesn't want to go to LSU. He says, we're going to recruit an unbelievable class this year. So I'm the dumbest human being on God's earth to recruit all these guys to A&M so I can go across over there and play against them. If you left, I bet some of them would go with you to LSU. Let's not kid ourselves. And LSU's going to have good players as well. So not buying that. Jimbo's unbelievable. He's 7-3. And it's not really, you know, they beat Alabama, but it's not exactly been this. They were supposed to contend for the playoff. And somehow he's the belle of the ball.
somehow he got 10 years, $90 million. And somehow, yes, he's the guy that supposedly LSU just can't live without. And I mean, it's something. It really is. The fact that he won a national championship 8 years ago carries a lot of weight.
He really couldn't move the ball against that mighty Ole Miss defense on Saturday. I don't know how much you guys watched that game, but they were running into a brick wall. For a guy with all the reputed offensive acumen, this A&M team has been hard to watch on offense. Now, they had a young O-line that's grown up some. They've gotten a little better as the year's gone on, but they haven't exactly been some like paragon of creative coach tape that people are going to look back on and say, man, this A&M team's been really just innovative or fun to watch.
With Jimbo, one of the reasons he's supposed to stay, according to the Texas A&M people, is he has two ranches.
Yes.
Just the most Texas thing I've ever heard in my life. I got one ranch that I bought a damn other one because I'm so rich. What do you need two ranches for? You can only be in one place at a time.
And I can tell you, like in that area of Texas, if they're both their College Station, the ranches can't be that dissimilar, right? It's all the same sagebrush and dirt.
I got two ranches.
There's nothing I like more that gets me more into like the coaching carousel giddiness than the talk of secondary homes when regarding a coach and whether he will leave. He might be in the Florida State job. He's got a condo in Delray. It's just like, what are you talking about? If you're rich enough to have a second home, you're rich enough to fly there. The proximity of the second home should have nothing to do with anyone's job prospects. You don't think they could like get a million NetJet hours and fly him to that ranch? I'm sure there's a private runway on it, right?
The worst was the like so-and-so's wife is with a realtor in town. That is never a concern. They'll find a house. They make a lot of money.
Zillow, okay?
What are the schools like?
They don't need to be driving around making a show of themselves looking for the housing.
Got to tour schools, Pat, for the kids.
Yeah, right. Got to tour the schools, sure.
One place that continues to roll that we want to give a little congratulations to in college athletics is Texas Tech's meat judging team. Yeah.
Yeah. Still going,
Won its third national championship this week, eighth national championship since 2010, total dynasty in judging of meat. And yes, this is a real sport, not an NCAA sanctioned, I don't believe, but it should damn be because this is where real world applications, okay? Not that much need for, football players. I don't need a football player. They entertain me, but I don't need one. But I need a guy who can judge some meat or a woman. And Texas Tech does it well.
Yeah. What is USDA primed? Is that what these people decide?
It's not like the barbecue pitmaster competition where you just like eat the meat and say, I like his best or her best. You go and they set these things up. It's kind of dastardly. They'll make like wrong cuts to try to throw them off and like miscount the ribs in a side of beef or a pig that's hanging. And these guys go in with their little lab coats like Pauly and Rocky, and they're in there and they judge the meat, and whoever gets the least mistakes wins. And Texas Tech's just unbelievable at this.
I'm going to steal one of Dan's jokes here. Like, much like Army should always dominate riflery, Texas Tech should always dominate meat judging, right? Yes. I would question the world order if it was like Minnesota was like the tops in that. No chance.
Or the granola guys in Oregon. Yeah, we do not want them winning the meat judging. The championship of meat judging should never leave the state of Texas ever. So Lubbock, that seems like the home.
Guns up, grills up.
Yeah, it's quite a thing. So congrats to that. I think that's a great. You don't get extra meat, though, they said. Some of the athletes do complain. It's much like, who's that Connecticut point guard who complained he couldn't eat?
Oh, yeah, Shabazz Napier. Shabazz Napier got everybody unlimited meals, even though, never mind.
Starving Shabazz couldn't eat. But unfortunately, that didn't go down. If you want a training table, it should be the meat judges. Like, they should have a heck of a training table. They don't get it. So there is that. I don't know, but I wanted to give a quick shout out to that. And while we're talking about food,
I just was going to say, this is like, we every once in a while we get the Wetzel investigative reporting Jones going here. It's been the tap water. It's been the singers. And now we've got it on the, he's done the deep dive on the meat judging. So the listeners are dependent on you, Dan, for your reporting skills to bring these things to light to us.
It's really a public service.
This public service. There's a Pulitzer for public service journalism.
Yes.
I think you might win.
You set up a GoFundMe to thank you for helping America.
Yeah. I mean, it's really the recruiting. The recruiting is the key to this, right? And sure. Mark Miller is the coach of the meat judging team. And he did a heck of a job, clearly bringing in these guys. Texas Tech plays four competitors in the top six individually.
Four out of six. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's total domination.
Someone named Deming. I'm reading the Avalanche Journal. Deming doesn't have a first name. It's like those Brazilian soccer stars. just
one name.
Deming. Yeah. New Mexico native Kylan Sweeney finished second overall. And I mean, there's a lot of things too.
So
there's overall beef judging, lamb judging, and total placing. There's also Cassie Bendel from Hondo, Texas.
Hondo, there you go. Yep,
she totaled 1,055 points. She was very good in beef and lamb. Those are her specialties. You got to have like the role players.
What you got to scout the FFA competitions, right? Get your future farmers of America. Yeah, that you're going to the little locales like we were talking San Marcos.
Oh, how about Hondo is apparently it because Preston Tilwiger was finished right behind Cassie.
No, okay.
Preston and Cassie from Hondo, Texas.
Hondo's the hotbed of meat judges. Let me
find a little something out about this place. Yeah. I had no idea.
The Wetzel deep dive continues. We'll get a full
8,000 person town, sort of near San Antonio.
Yeah.
Man, they need a parade for these guys. Come on, Hondo. Step it up.
Parade them on the meat wagon. Let's go.
All right. While we're talking food, let's do a quick game of Would You Eat It? How about that? Okay. A little quick. Always a fan favorite. Thanksgiving's coming up.
Yes.
We all love Thanksgiving and eating. And so, you know, we want to ask if you would eat these. This is Would You Eat It? These are some classic Thanksgiving dishes that, quote, no one makes anymore, according to this list on the internet. Nobody.
Here we go.
It's like original pilgrim stuff, because if you ever look at the original meal, it's not that good. It's like beef jerky, like venison jerky, and like they just kind of heated up a pumpkin and called it pumpkin pie.
You know, it was the 1600s or 1500s. You take what you get, right?
16. Yeah.
Okay. They didn't have an air fryer until like 1732.
All right. This is a weird one. Apparently, this was popular in the Depression. Turkey leftovers in an aspic. I don't know what this is. It's basically you take turkey and put it in a gelatin.
Yeah, that sounds horrendous. That's what an aspic is. No. I would not eat that.
I think that's my first no on the pod. It's big news. It's
the only time Sully's ever said no to
me. I've got a pretty strong track record of no, and it's not ending here.
Turkey, frozen vegetables, cream of celery soup, and ranch dressing mixed with gelatin.
Oh, God.
It's from the 1975 cookbook called Carefree Cooking with Aluminum Foil.
Come on.
That was a bestseller. All right. How about this one? This is a big college football beverage. Dr. Pepper, hot Dr. Pepper. In 1968, here's an ad for hot Dr. Pepper. You heat up your Dr. Pepper till it's steaming hot, and then you put a lemon slice in it and you drink it.
No, I'm drinking a Dr. Pepper right now. That's gross.
I would try it. I would try it. I'm not opposed to a nice warm beverage, but does it lose its carbonation? Because if it does, then I'm out. That's all. It's all about the carbonation.
It was supposedly very popular.
Tim Salem doesn't need carbonation. It's just for efficiency.
That's true.
Dr. Pepper came up with this concept in the 60s to, quote, keep profits strong during the holiday season when sales of cold pop plummet. I don't know. What does Fanville think of that? What's Sheriff Bosworth think of this?
There you go. Get the Fansville vote on that. Because
I actually think if you put the right adult beverage
turn it
in
into
there,
a hottie toddy. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I'm out with it. Yeah. All right.
But that, so, like, were people that dumb back in the day? It's just like, well, we're having trouble selling our Dr. Pepper. Just tell them to heat it and they're going to do it.
Apparently it just worked. They were eating turkey inside gelatin. I don't know. How about the quote unquote cranberry surprise? Anyone want the cranberry surprise?
Oh,
would you
man.
Eat it?
I don't like surprise. Would
you like
surprise
me to describe it?
Yeah.
Do you like, surprises.
Yeah, I'm Pat, leery of the surprise.
Would you like
there.
To hear what's in it at least?
Sure.
The cranberry surprise. Cranberry surprise is it's cranberries mixed with Hellman's mayonnaise. And
no.
It blends the tartness of cranberries with the delicate creaminess of Hellman's real
delicate.
Mayonnaise.
Man, did
hell
it,
no.
Did the mayonnaise bowl write this?
I know how you guys feel about mayonnaise. I'm tempted to say yes just to spite you both.
Jello salad.
My Thanksgiving dinner. God.
How about Jello salad? Nobody makes the old. Nobody makes the Jello salad anymore. They used to throw fruit and like Jello, and then
actually one of my favorite dishes. A good,
really?
A good
Sully's in.
Good pineapple Jello salad. That's a good little side dish. I'm a fan.
I know, okay. Like, I can't say if this is 100% up to date, but the Mormons were big on Jello salad. That was kind of like a joke in Provo and points elsewhere that Mormons love their Jello salad. So,
I mean, my kids would see right through this thing as a dessert. They'd be like, you're just making us eat fruit. I mean, this is just a bowl of fruit. That's a fruit salad. All right, we'll upgrade it to this, the modernized. Last one of Would You Eat It? The 9-inch Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. I don't know if you saw this. Limited editions of the Reese's Peanut Butter Pie, they're calling it. It is not a pie. There's nothing like, there's no, like, we've all had, like, peanut butter pie, whatever. They can make it. This is just an enormous Reese's cup. It's just a 9-inch wide, 9-inch diameter peanut butter cup. They've just cut out the middleman. There's no pretend. It's just, this is an enormous peanut butter cup. Slice it up and serve it. It sold out like instantaneously. It was going for almost $50 a pie. I don't know what the secondary market for peanut butter cups are, but would you eat it? The 9-inch Reese's peanut butter cup. Sully, do I have to ask?
No, you don't.
Okay.
Hell yeah. So here's my question. Why is it limited edition? Make it massive edition. Let's all buy one. I'm in.
Yeah, the fact that Reese's hasn't done this really is disturbing to me. And I'm not a big dessert guy. I know I get teased for being Captain Acai Bowl on this. I love me some Reese's. Like, whoo.
Yeah.
At the Senior Bowl, they passed out giant ones. And I'd imagine that's where they got this idea.
That's a
absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
They have been making Reese's cups since 1919.
Really?
And what the hell took them so long? 102 years? We just thought of this? What is sometimes there's like mental blocks on humanity on what we're capable of. Some people used to look at the moon and just see this thing out there. And then someone said, hey, let's go there. I think it's the same thing. Why?
Is this like a 1950s pep talk, like an FDR fireside chat or something, Dan? Let's go to the moon. I don't think people come here for pep talks.
There were winners. There was a non-winner. And then there was the real winner, dessert.
That's good.
I want this thing, man. I want this thing.
Hell yeah.
Not off the secondary market, though. I don't trust buying a...
That might be a little sketchy. Give your credit card. Give your credit card number, and then drive to Wadi, Kentucky, and pick up your pie. Yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
All right, let's get to some of the games this weekend. We're going to pick them, of course, in the race for the case. But let's talk briefly, just big picture on two of them, because there are two games that have massive implications here that are obvious. And the big one is Oregon, Utah, and then Michigan State visiting Ohio State. Let's just go quickly with those two. Can Michigan State do this? Like, what, you know, would this is a, it'd been a dream season. It's, you know, we said house money. This is a team that won two games last year. We're supposed to win 4-5 this year. They're 9-1 and have a chance at one of the miracle runs I've ever seen. But Buckeyes and then Nittany Lions waiting after that, which you got to survive. We've seen Michigan State under Mark D'Antonio be the one team that can actually beat Ohio State in the Big Ten. I wouldn't say consistently, but more than once, which is as consistent as it gets. Pat, your thoughts on what this just means for the Michigan State program and Mel Tucker, without giving out your obvious pick, and which we'll do on the Thursday show.
Yeah, massive opportunity, as you said. I mean, this would take a remarkable season to like extreme dream, you know, and give you a chance to play for the national championship, possibly for Mel Tucker to make $10 million a year, whether it's from Michigan State or somewhere else, maybe not 10, but he's going to get paid a lot after this season. Can they do it? I think it's going to be very hard. You can come up with things they need to do. All right. You know, I think you have to be able to run the ball and eat clock and slow this game down from where Ohio State wants it. You've got a bad, bad pass defense going against a great, great pass offense. So that's your problem there. They've got three phenomenal receivers, a dangerous tight end, a creative offensive mind in Ryan Day, and a really good quarterback if he has time. And he usually has time. But Michigan State's second in the Big Ten in sacks. So can you heat up C.J. Stroud, make him make a couple mistakes, have Kenneth Walker III play like a Heisman winner, run the ball 30 times for 150 yards, shrink the game, avoid giving up too many big plays, avoid turnovers, avoid key penalties. Unfortunately, you're not going to get the 2015 weather, where it was that just disastrous weather day and you slog past them 17-14 or whatever it was. And I covered that game. So you need a lot to go right. Could it happen? Yeah. But is it likely? Oh, no.
So we're gonna dive into the game more on the picks pod later in the week. So I'm gonna answer your question with a question. Let's say you are Mel Tucker and you are on top of the world this week, right? You are 9-1. You are in playoff contention, and you have Michigan State rolling in this like wondrously improbable season. You're gonna be the Big Ten Coach of the Year. You're probably going to be one of the National Coach of the Year finalists, if not winning. There's a few of those. You're probably going to win one of those. Everything is coming up green. Do you sign a long-term extension with Michigan State this week before you play Ohio State on the road and then Penn State? Or do you roll the dice, go through these games, and see what your market is? And basically saying, do you risk your 18.5-point underdogs? Do you risk getting blown out? And some of the bloom coming off the rose. And then, you know, Penn State's a coin flip game, right? I'd be stunned if Michigan State was favored by more than 3 in that game. And Michigan State certainly isn't designed to blow teams out. So I would think that, you know, on paper, as long as Clifford's healthy, is going to be a very close game. What do you do if you're Mel Tucker? Do you bet on yourself in this coaching market, or do you take what assuredly is, you know, is a contract offer and, you know, juiced up salary that's coming?
So obviously the presumption is also that Mel Tucker cares about squeezing every last dollar out, right? Which is fine. So that's the thing. I let it roll. First off, you're going to get in, and even if for some reason you lost these next two games and nobody, all these other jobs don't want you, and we just talked, there's too many good jobs. That's not going to happen. But even if it did, you can go to Michigan State and say, look, in year two, look what I just did for you. Stadium's full. We just beat Michigan. I'm 2-0 against Michigan. I mean, Michigan State loves Mel Tucker.
Yes.
They love Mel Tucker. So, yeah, you may not get 10, maybe. You might get 8. You might get... Michigan State is going to overpay for Mel Tucker. They have to overpay. Michigan State doesn't have the other resources to draw in great coaching talent. What they need to do is do their best to overcompensate in terms of money to get that guy. It's just reality. They can't change the reality of we're not LSU with 20 great recruits in the state all wanting to come to us. There are 20 great recruits in the state of Michigan to begin with, and they don't all want to come to you. You don't have that. You have to do something else. So I would wait, because I think Mel Tucker is going to be fine and can make, you know, he can get $7-8 million to stretch pretty far there in Lansing.
He's like, yeah, buy your chili Mac and whatever the heck else.
Can get two ranches.
How much could they get him in Jackson, where Pat likes to stay?
Yeah, he could buy Jackson.
I think he could buy I'm most telling
you
of what, Jackson.
Yes, he can buy all ranches of downtown Jackson and a snow hut up on the Upper Peninsula if he wants that too.
So the other is Oregon, firmly in position. They just need to ride this out. Not easy to ride it out in Salt Lake City. a Saturday night against Utah, or it'll be late afternoon in beautiful Rice-Eccles Stadium, one of my favorite stadiums. I was partial to the mountain views.
It's nice. It is nice. About Salt Lake.
There is a lot to like about Salt Lake. Once they relaxed their alcohol rules, wasn't so good about 20 years ago.
No, but it's you had to become a member of every bar you wanted to go to.
I have a lot of memberships. I have a lot of I'm a member of a lot of things. Very interesting game. We don't always have a ton of really exciting, interesting Pac-12 games, but this is one of them. Pat, your thought on the Ducks and the Utes?
Definitely the toughest test for the Ducks since the loss to Stanford. And they've had some close calls, but going to Utah, you're going to finally get like a real atmosphere. I think you're going to play in there. You're getting a good team that's playing well. Kyle Whittingham is such a consistently good coach, you know, year in and year out. And here they are sitting there 7-3. They've won three in a row. They're back to punching people. They're running the ball well. They're stopping the other team from running the ball. They're doing all the things that you expect a Kyle Whittingham team to do. So this is a big challenge for Oregon. They've got to be on top of it. Anthony Brown has been good, sometimes inconsistent. He was really good running the ball against Washington State when they needed him to be last weekend. They've just had guys step up. I mean, this is a hell of a coaching job by Cristobal. If you look at, some of the injuries, some of the positional uncertainty that they've had, guys in and out of the lineup, I am really, really impressed with the way they've just kind of put this season together. Both coaches, I think, have done an outstanding job in this game.
I am really curious to see who wins the Battle of the Trenches here. Like one of my indelible images, other than Joe Moorhead just exploiting the edges of that Ohio State-Oregon game, was really how Oregon got a consistent push up front on both sides of the ball. And C.J. Stroud was rushed and hurried and rattled and did not have a good game because of it. So Utah has long been built under Kyle Whittingham to smash you up front on both sides of the ball. And I'm really curious if they can open up some room for Tavion Thomas, who's a great back. Can Utah control the game and then eventually force Anthony Brown to win the game with his arm? Because he is very much a game manager. He obviously has some pop in his legs, which certainly helps him. But I really think that Utah's number 18 ranked rush offense in the country and number 34 ranked total defense and a decent rush defense are going to be what allows the Utes to potentially control the game here, push them around, maybe let the atmosphere rattle Oregon a little bit and see if they can see if they can push them around a little bit.
Quick update on Jared Casey, our favorite walk-on from Plainville, Kansas. There's another Plainville, Kansas walk-on going anywhere. I don't know. Jared Casey caught the two-point conversion against Texas. He's a 5'9", a fullback or tight end. They don't have fullbacks. They didn't want to list him as a tight end because it's embarrassing to have a 5'9 tight end. He had never played before until the game against Texas. They win the game. Jared Casey, in the latest example of how name, image, and likeness rules have ruined college athletics and are a terrible thing to society and all the other things all those old commissioners used to say, was filming an Applebee's commercial this week that will run in the state of Kansas, and he will get paid to be in an Applebee's commercial.
That is beautiful. That's
awesome.
NIL at work, baby. That is a phenomenal, phenomenal story. And did you guys hear the did you see and hear the video of his parents watching him score?
Yeah,
the
that was on. They couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it.
That was that's Jared.
Imagine, Mom, I think I'm going to play. Really? Really? Against Texas? You're going to get hurt. Yeah. Well, if nothing else, he is sparing the people of Kansas from having to hear that awful Applebee's song that is a country hit or something, that jingle, awful. So that alone, I'd rather, they better not incorporate the song or else I'll take it all back. Jared, you are terrible. No, this is good. Good for Jared. All right. We've all been to a lot of press conferences and heard some doozies of questions and some homer media, partisan media, state-run media. Sully, cue the tape. of Texas coach Steve Sarkisian. Things aren't really going so well. They lost five in a row in a terrible first season. But sometimes facing the media is really more like talking to your life coach.
Good morning to you, Coach Sarkisian.
Good morning.
Coach, a couple of years ago, one of my good friends and I were faced with a massive problem we couldn't solve. And in his wisdom, he said, you know, at this point, we need to stop and ask ourselves, what would an extraordinary person do in this situation? And this resonated with me the whole weekend. And I realized that of all the coaches who could be standing at that podium right now in those shoes, you are that extraordinary person. And you have a team of what I call coaching juggernauts. This is not only my opinion, this is a fact. I don't think anyone could dispute this. So my question, as we write, you know, the Sarkisian era story, we're not even done with the first chapter yet, can you unfold some of the onion of what are you working on? How are you solving this problem? I realize that you might not even know, but, you know, I'm going to steal from Julian Edelman. It's going to be one hell of a story.
Yeah.
I mean, who was at? Is that like his brother asking that question?
I'm telling you, if I were in the room, I would have done one of two things. I would have either sprinted over and tackled that guy, or would have had to just walk out to avoid sprinting over and tackling that guy.
Wow, you had violence. There would have been violence?
Yes. It drives me to the point of like homicide. I mean, it's just unbelievable that somebody would sit there and ask this question. Like, get out of our lives. Get this person out of the press conference.
This is the nicest question ever asked of a coach who absolutely sucks this year.
Coaching juggernaut.
And Pat wants to go murder the guy. I don't think anyone would disagree. It's a fact, Sully. They are coaching juggernaut. All right. Aside from, I did not think Pat would threaten death. But I have questions. This guy is clearly one of the great minds and brilliant people, and I'm sure his friend is equally intelligent. What the hell is the massive problem that they could not solve? That's what I want to know. What is the massive? It was like, we couldn't get the...
Would you eat it?
Yes. I think it involves how to fold the onion. What the hell is
fold
that?
Fold it back in after unfolding it? Yeah. Oh, my God.
That is a massive problem that you would not find. How do you fold an onion?
And then he quotes Julian Edelman. Former Kent State quarterback Julian Edelman.
Great philosopher.
Quote, like Plato.
Great philosopher and PED user. Yeah.
Yeah. Even like Mac Brown or Colt McCoy or I don't know. But Julian Edelman.
Julian Edelman.
I mean.
And it was like a generic quote too. Like it didn't make any like that's not.
Nothing about that's the only made person any who sense. Says that. It's like if the guy just ate a handful of peyote outside and then walked in and asked a question. I mean, like, where did this come from?
I wish I could have been at the press conference and watched Pat watch that guy ask the question.
I couldn't have stood it. I really could. I would have said something. I would have done. It would have been bad.
Oh, I wish you were there. He should have at least been like, you know, Coach Harbaugh said there was a winner. There was a non-winner. The real winner is Texas football. I mean, the first chapter of Sark, man, this may be a short-ass book now.
Yeah. Epic Athletes is Moby Dick.
Yeah. I know they're trying to, like, strip a lot of books out of the old libraries down in Texas lately. Well, this ain't too heavy. Not really heavy lifting. The Steve Sarkisian era.
It's a pamphlet
era.
At this point.
Cookie message.
Now I just want to take peyote and go to a Texas press conference and see what kind of mayhem we can cook up.
And what is extraordinary? You're exceptionally ordinary? Is that it? Because that does describe the Longhorns. Extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
I was listening to that. Like the first time I actually had to stop it. I couldn't listen to it because it was driving me so crazy. I've said that like the best thing that I got out of 7 years at ESPN was a 3-day interview seminar. And they taught you how to ask interview questions. And this guy so wildly violated everything that we were taught for 3 days. I mean, it's like, short, open, neutral questions. Long, meandering, grandstanding, nonsensical, weird, endless.
I give Sark credit.
I mean,
yeah, that was the best performance Sarkisian's had all year. That, he did a good job.
Right.
He handled the absolutely terrible. I mean, look, there is the market now is about like at least half the media is just totally in the bag, if not more. Yeah. Like the business model now is how partisan can I be?
Yeah.
But the thing about college sports is even the most diehard, like I'll always back the program. You go, we suck, right? We got to be bad. Like, we can't be losing to Kansas. Like even the, you can't just, it can't be politics where you're like, yeah, right. You're like that piece of legislation caused like 2 million people to die. Yeah, but there were some good points. Like these guys can admit the problem. Even Bevo's like, I'm out of here. Let me go get meat judged. I'd rather be a meat judging competition than watch any more of this. Go see my relatives. But what the hell question was this?
I don't know. I mean, it's like just in from Pluto. I mean, it's so weird on every level. And who is, I'm actually disappointed in our Texas media brethren that they haven't outed who this numbskull is.
What's the massive problem?
They did out him. They did out him. I'm looking at it on Twitter right now.
Oh, yeah, who is from, he? Who is he?
He's from Horns Illustrated, which I double checked to make sure it was not owned by the Rivals Network. It is a guy I'd never heard of.
From Horns Illustrated. Please let Horns us know what the massive problem
Terry
was.
Terry Middleton.
And how the hell you fold an onion.
And how you decided that Steve Sarkisian is a coaching juggernaut. It's fact.
It's fact. No one would disagree.
No one would disagree. No one who just watched his team lose its fifth straight game to Kansas would disagree that he is a coaching juggernaut.
There are people in this country who think the world is flat, okay? People will disagree about anything in this. The 10% of the country thinks the earth is flat, including Kyrie Irving. We're going to be back to pick him up, race for the case. College football, baby.
Pat threatened homicide, mind you. I hope that
Pat is that now on the FBI. Yeah. Horns down.
Oh, Pat, only homicide, geez. Pat.
Hey.
Only like, homicide.
John Chaney didn't get investigated for saying he was going to kill Calipari. So, you know, give me a break.
You are on an FBI watch list right now, and I'm actually happy about that. All right. We'll talk to you guys with the race for the case.